Chapter 38. She was a little soured at losing by his marriage so profitable a tenant, as the surgeon had proved to be dueling his residence under her roof, and the more so in there being hardly the remotest chance of her getting such another settler in the Hintock solitudes. "'Tis what I don't wish to repeat, sir, least of all to you," she mumbled. "Never mind me, Mrs. Cox. Go ahead. It is what people say about your hasty marrying, Dr. Fitzpiers. Whereas they won't believe you know such clever doctrines in physic as they once supposed of ye, seeing as you could marry into Mr. Melberry's family, which is only Hintock-born, such as me. They are kindly welcome to their opinion," said Fitzpiers, not allowing himself to recognize that he winced. "Nothing else?" "Yes, she's come home at last." "Who's she?" "Mrs. Charmond."
"Oh, indeed," said Fitzpiers, with but slight interest. "I've never seen her."
"As he has seen you, sir, whether or no?"
"Never."
"Yes, she saw you in some hotel or street for a minute or two while you were away traveling, and accidentally heard your name. And when she made some remark about you, Miss Ellis, that's her maid, told her you was on your wedding tower with Mr. Melberry's daughter, and she said, he ought to have done better than that. I fear he has spoiled his chances, apostrophe she says." Fitzpiers did not talk much longer to this cheering housewife, and walked home with no very brisk step. He entered the door quietly, and went straight upstairs to the drawing room extemporized for their use by Melberry in his and his bride's absence, expecting to find her there as he had left her. The fire was burning still, but there were no lights. He looked into the next apartment, fitted up as a little dining room, but no supper was laid. He went to the top of the stairs, and heard a chorus of voices in the timber merchant's parlor below, graces being occasionally intermingled. Descending, and looking into the room from the doorway, he found quite a large gathering of neighbors and other acquaintances, praising and congratulating Mrs. Fitzpiers on her return, among them being the dairyman, Farmer Bawtry, and the master blacksmith from Great Hintock, also the cooper, the hollow turner, the exciseman, and some others, with their wives, who lived hard by. Grace, girl that she was, had quite forgotten her new dignity and her husband's. She was in the midst of them, blushing, and receiving their compliments with all the pleasure of old comradeship. Fitzpiers experienced a profound distaste for the situation. Melberry was nowhere in the room, but Melberry's wife, perceiving the doctor, came to him. "He thought, Grace and I," she said, "that as they have called, hearing you were come, we could do no less than ask them to supper." And then Grace proposed that we should all sup together, as it is the first night of your return. By this time Grace had come round to him. "Is it not good of them to welcome me so warmly?" she exclaimed, with tears of friendship in her eyes. "Stir so much good feeling, I could not think of our shutting ourselves up away from them in our own dining room."
Certainly not," said Fitzpiers, and he entered the room with the heroic smile of a martyr. As soon as they sat down to table, Melberry came in, and seemed to see at once that Fitzpiers would much rather have received no such demonstrative reception. He thereupon privately chid his wife for her forwardness in the matter. Mrs. Melberry declared that it was as much Grace's doing as hers, after which there was no more to be said by that young woman's tender father. By this time Fitzpiers was making the best of his position among the wide-elbowed and genial company who sat eating and drinking and laughing and joking around him, and getting warmed himself by the good cheer, was obliged to admit that, after all, the supper was not the least enjoyable he had ever known. At times, however, the words about his having spoiled his opportunities, repeated to him as those of Mrs. Charmond, haunted him like a handwriting on the wall. Then his manner would become suddenly abstracted. At one moment he would mentally put an indignant query, why Mrs. Charmond or any other woman should make it her business to have opinions about his opportunities, At another, he thought that he could hardly be angry with her for taking an interest in the doctor of her own parish. Then he would drink a glass of grog, and so get rid of the misgiving. These hitches and quaffings were soon perceived by Grace as well as by her father, and hence both of them were much relieved when the first of the guests to discover that the hour was growing late rose and declared that he must think of moving homeward. At the words, Melberry rose as alertly as if lifted by a spring, and in 10 minutes they were gone. "Now, Grace," said her husband, as soon as he found himself alone with her in their private apartments, "we've had a very pleasant evening, and everybody has been very kind. But we must come to an understanding about our way of living here. If we continue in these rooms, there must be no mixing in with your people below. I can't stand it, and that's the truth." As he had been sadly surprised at the suddenness of his distaste for those old-fashioned woodland forms of life which in his courtship he had professed to regard with so much interest. But she assented in a moment. "We must be simply your father's tenants," he continued, "and our goings and comings must be as independent as if we lived elsewhere." "Certainly, Edgar, I quite see that it must be so. But you joined in with all those people in my absence, without knowing whether I should approve or disapprove. When I came, I couldn't help myself at all." She, sighing, colon, "yes, I see I ought to have waited, though they came unexpectedly, and I thought I had acted for the best." Thus the discussion ended, and the next day Fitzpiers went on his old rounds as usual. But it was easy for so super subtle an eye as his to discern, or to think he discerned, that he was no longer regarded as an extrinsic, unfathomed gentleman of limitless potentiality, scientific and social, but as Mr. Melberry's compeer, and therefore in a degree only one of themselves. The Hintock woodlandlers held with all the strength of inherited conviction to the aristocratic principle, and as soon as they had discovered that Fitzpiers was one of the old Buckberry Fitzpierces, they had accorded to him for nothing a touching of hat brims, promptness of service, and deference of approach, which Melberry had to do without, though he paid for it over and over. But now, having proved a traitor to his own cause by this marriage, Fitzpiers was believed in no more as a superior etched by his own divinity, while as doctor he began to be rated no higher than old Jones, whom they had so long despised. His few patients seemed in his 2 months' absence to have dwindled considerably in number, and no sooner had he returned than there came to him from the Board of Guardians a complaint that a pauper had been neglected by his substitute. In a fit of pride, Fitzpiers resigned his appointment as one of the surgeons to the Union, which had been the nucleus of his practice here. At the end of a fortnight he came indoors one evening to Grace more briskly than usual. "They have written to me again about that practice in Budmouth that I once negotiated for," he said to her. "He premium asked is £800, and I think that between your father and myself it ought to be raised. Then we can get away from this place forever." The question had been mooted between them before, and she was not unprepared to consider it. They had not proceeded far with the discussion when a knock came to the door, and in a minute Grammer ran up to say that a message had arrived from Hintock House requesting Dr. Fitzpiers to attend there at once. Mrs. Charmond had met with a slight accident through the overturning of her carriage. "This is something, anyhow," said Fitzpiers, rising with an interest which he could not have defined. "Have had a presentiment that this mysterious woman and I were to be better acquainted." The latter words were murmured to himself alone. "Good night," said Grace, as soon as he was ready. "She'll be asleep, probably, when you return." "Good night," he replied, inattentively, and went downstairs. It was the first time since their marriage that he had left her without a kiss. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.